Welcome to the Performance Baseball Podcast, talking about youth baseball coaching and player development. Our goal is to equip coaches and parents to win on and off the field.
We are your hosts, Adam Young
and Josh Riley.
Like, subscribe, and comment, and if you ask a question in the comments, we'll do our best to answer it.
Now, let's go to the show.
All right, welcome back to the Performance Baseball Podcast. How you doing, Josh?
Doing well. Yeah, it's a nice rainy day here in Oklahoma. Yeah, a little wet, but we had a good weekend. Baseball, we had a big tournament. But now we're just getting swing things this week.
Yeah, my 10U boys, we got our first tournament win this weekend.
That's
fantastic. Which we were really excited about. We'd gotten to the point where we were in a final before and had gotten rings, but hadn't quite finished the job. And so this was our first one where we actually pulled it off and got the win. So it was a lot of fun. And
dude,
my son
awesome.
Actually hit the game winning, you know, walk-off hit. So that was really special for me too, personally.
Oh, that's awesome. That's like an experience that he's going to remember for a long time. Those are always fun. Those are always fun.
Probably also why my voice is a little cracked today.
Yeah, we were playing the Oklahoma-Texas shootout this weekend for the third.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, 64 teams. It was nonstop. Man, gosh, we were stationed in Bartlesville on Sunday. And, of course, I came home Saturday night, so I had a two-and-a-half-hour drive. Report time was 7:45, so out the door 4:45. Man,
woo!
It was a long weekend.
Yeah.
I don't miss it.
Yeah. Well, today we are joined today by Freddie Perez. Freddie is a friend of my sister's, actually, and I got to know him when I did her wedding, and we got to talking baseball, and I found out that he is a professional scout now with the Houston Astros. So welcome, Freddie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, guys. It's a pleasure. I'm excited to do this.
Yeah, this is fun. We've been looking forward to this conversation. So thanks for hopping on with us. I know you're a busy guy, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Here to, you know, help out any way I can.
Yeah. So first off, I was reading your bio. I saw you grew up in San Diego. I'm actually from San Diego, too. What part did you grow up in?
I grew up in La Mesa.
Oh, okay. Nice. I was up in Oceanside area. So,
okay.
Well, high school, or no, you moved out of town in high school, right?
Yeah. So I would have gone to Helix High School, out there in La Mesa, just right there across the street from San Diego State. And I ended up going, my dad was in the military, so he got stationed up in Everett, Washington. So I went to high school a little bit north of Seattle.
Gotcha. And what was kind of your experience? Cause it looks like you've kind of bounced around growing up. So you're in Seattle,
yeah.
Then you came back down to California. It sounds like you and I, we crossed paths because San Diego, and I saw in college, I actually went to Biola, so I know you were downstream of Fullerton. So,
yeah.
What was your story? You know, we're all bounced around.
I wanted to, you know, chase the dream like most high school baseball players do. And I went down to Cal State Fullerton. Just growing up in Orange County, it was kind of a pipeline dream school for me to play. They were always good when I was younger, and always kind of looked up to that program. And so I went down there to try to play for a year and walk on. I ended up, you know, tearing up my knee and getting hurt and kind of having to move on from that. But in the process of a lot of that, you know, you meet a ton of scouts, you meet a lot of people in baseball, and that kind of still piqued my interest. Even though I wasn't playing, it was still in the back of my mind that it was something I wanted to stay in. So once I ended up transferring to the University of Colorado. I got a degree, and once I got my finance degree, it was just kind of hit the ground running, contact as many people as I had in my phone and try to see if I can get a job somewhere. So I was lucky enough to land with the Rockies, and it kind of boosted my career from there.
That's awesome. What position did you play when you were playing?
I was a second baseman. I played a little bit of outfield in high school as well, but majority of my life, I was the little middle infielder. I was kind of like your IQ guy who I played smart. I didn't have like these big tools, nothing like what I'm scouting right now. It's funny when I'm scouting now and I envision myself as a player and I'm like, yeah, I probably wouldn't have liked myself as a player, but I was I was probably more of the cerebral, you know, fast guy, twitchy dude up the middle.
Gotcha.
That's awesome.
Gotcha.
That's kind of what my son is. Yep.
Yeah, you gotta play to your strengths, right? And I'm not a big dude, you know, and everyone around me, especially at Fullerton, a lot bigger, stronger tools and bodies than I could ever forge. And so I knew what my path was. And you kind of, like I said, you got to know yourself as a player.
Yeah. What year were you at Fullerton?
That was 11. Yeah. 2010 and 11.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. Nice. Nice. I know Fullerton's always a powerhouse, or at least they were back in that time.
Yeah. And they're kind of coming around as of late right now. Actually, they went through a little bit of a scuffle. The coach I played for actually ended up leaving. And he's not there anymore, but they're kind of turning things around over there. So it's, I still kind of watch from afar. You know, we're always rooting for the guys that you have a little bit of impact with. So
for sure. Well, for sure.
We've been watching OU baseball. And of course, this is their first season in the SEC. So that SEC baseball, that's a big jump.
It's a huge difference. It's incredible. Even seeing what, you know, some of these boys are doing now, guys throwing 100 miles an hour, and you're like, wow, like this is incredible that dudes that are 20, 21 years old are throwing this hard now. And it's probably, they've been throwing that hard probably, you know, years before that too.
Yeah.
So,
man, the game has changed. The game has evolved since, man. Yeah. That, I mean, like I graduated in 2012 and like played indie ball. And like, I think the fastest I threw or that I saw was probably like low nines, you know, like, yeah. And now you're seeing just hundreds, you know, upper nines are usually like the norm.
Yeah. I mean, I'm watching high school kids right now that are throwing 93, 94, and they're not even genuinely getting scouted sometimes, you know, and they're going to these like smaller mid-major schools because, everyone kind of throws hard now, and that's kind of the reality of the sport. It's like the athleticism and the strength has caught up to it. So now it's learning how to actually use the tools that you have and the God-given ability that, you know, you're kind of learning how to use your athleticism and your strength to learn how to play the game. I think that's kind of the separator now with some of these high school kids. It's if everyone's going to throw hard, then who's the guy that knows what he's doing with it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah.
Do you think that the proliferation of those arms is contributing to the Tommy John surgeries that we're seeing in high school a lot? Is it velocity related or what else could it be?
I mean, it's going to be a factor of things. A lot of it is training without actually having the knowledge of why you're doing the training and actually having like the proper form behind it,
like plyo balls and stuff.
Yeah, and just understanding like what your goals are. Like I think everyone wants to throw hard, right? But does your body and your anatomy allow you to do that? If you're a 5'6", 12, 13 year old boy trying to throw 85, 90 miles an hour, you're probably, your anatomy just hasn't caught up to you yet. You're not able to do that. But some of these training regimens are still selling you on these arm cares and these arm strength programs. And so you might be throwing hard, but your body's telling you like, we just haven't matured enough to get to this point yet. Yeah. And now you're seeing injuries kind of escalate because of that. And you're seeing kids get Tommy John, and even though they're small and they don't throw hard, they're getting Tommy John as sophomores, juniors in high school. So it's kind of understanding, like, again, like I think I'm just coming from a baseball side and as a scout, like self-awareness is huge in what we do, and having the ability to extrapolate yourself from the situation and understand the type of player you are, and really understanding what your strengths are, like that's going to make you significantly better, because not everyone is tailored to throw very hard. You might be the guy who can throw breaking balls really well, or you're the guy who throws a lot of strikes. So kind of tailoring to your strengths are going to actually kind of, I think, elevate what everything else is maybe missing. So I like to, like, especially kids 14, 15 years old, like I'm like, focus on the things that are in your control. Like you can control throwing strikes. Learn how to throw strikes, learn how to pitch, because the velocity and the maturity of your body will come with it. And then all of a sudden, when you're athletic and your body's moving a little bit more freely and you're getting into your mechanics, now all of a sudden the velocity is just coming naturally because your body's learning how to go through those motions and you're not thinking about it. You're just doing them. You know, the best players in the world don't think about their mechanics. They just go out there and they play and they do it. And it's repetition, it's balance, rhythm, and timing. And they're able to do that. And it's not strenuous. They're not getting hurt all the time because they've allowed their bodies to get to that point.
Josh and I were talking was it last week? And I said, you know, hey, I haven't really been doing ply balls with my 10U boys. What do you think? And he said, you know, I think it's good as long as it's done within reason and we're not, you're not throwing the 16 ounce ball, you know, maybe throw that 7.5 ounce ball or, you know, a 9 ounce ball instead of the trying to do it all the way that, you know, to and putting that extra strain on those joints. I think the other major factor is overuse too. I think that the whole system that we've got right now with playing tournaments and playing so many games, which is fun, don't get me wrong, and we're in it. it can really lend to overuse, and I think that's part of it too.
Yeah. I think it all comes down to like understanding the maturing nature of the athletes too, seeing where they're at, what their age is, what they're capable of. Kind of like what you said, you know, the anatomy. Yeah, being a trainer, you know, you have to understand what their body is actually capable of, and also if they're, you know, if they're prepubescent, it's like they shouldn't be touching heavy balls. You know, like running a 5 ounce is pretty good. If you're doing a reverse throw with a plyo ball, maybe a 7, just because we're trying to build up strength. But like, yeah, it's just understanding where that player is.
Right.
Yeah. So you have these 10-year-olds training like they're 18-year-olds, you know, because they're seeing it. And so it's kind of like, all right, like we can get to that step so that when you are 18, you're not extraneously putting a lot of effort and pressure onto your body where your body's getting used to the gradual, you know, grade of, all right, this is the progression of how we get stronger. Yeah. Everyone wants like quick results, and we all want home runs and 100 miles an hour. And so I think that's why you're seeing a lot of like these injuries pop up a little bit more. But if you take your time, and the good ones do, and they listen to their bodies and they kind of allow it to naturally progress.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know, so like your background, I know you jumped in with the Rockies and then quickly, you know, worked into the player development side. Like what did that look like? What all were you doing player development wise with the Rockies to start out? I know you jumped a couple teams, but could you give a little bit more of a backstory on that?
Yeah, of course. So I actually kind of have a weird story too, but after college, I wanted to get into it and stay into it. I walked into the front office with a resume and just said, like, I'll do whatever. I had heard you got free tickets if you worked there, and I wanted to watch free baseball. And so I just handed it in. They were like, "That's okay, awesome. It's personable. Like, let's put them in the ticket office." And so I was selling tickets, and I eventually like sold suites. And I kind of worked my way through that for like, it was like a 6-7 month period. And through all of that, when you work games at night, you're allowed to eat into the cafeteria, right? And you're there all night and you're just kind of checking on things. One night I had the farm director was eating by himself, and I just grabbed my dinner and I sat across from him and I just said, like, "Hi, my name's Freddie Perez. I played at Cal State Fullerton. Hi, this is what I do here. This is what I think I bring to the table, and this is how I think I can help you." And about a week later, he pulled me from that ticket office and he made me his player development intern. And he sent me into, so my first job was essentially like minor league video. So I was kind of going around in Scottsdale, which is where the minor league spring training facility is. We were down there throughout the entire spring training, extended spring training, and I was kind of just bopping around getting video of all the players. Now that job is kind of a lot more digitized because we have cameras all over the fields now. But back then it was like me running around with a handheld, like just going back and forth watching guys. And I had like a whole list of, you know, there's 4 games going on in the backfield or something, and I have a whole list of players, and I'm just like, all right, like this is what we're doing. And we would use that for development purposes. So we'd go into the video room, we would break down film, you know, and have the coaches come in here with the players, and I'd be operating it all and just kind of learning. I think the main purpose of me having that job too was to learn. I never coached, I never pitched. And so like all these things that I never necessarily did on my own, that's kind of what I wanted to focus on. So I would sit in all of like the bullpen meetings, all of the coaches meetings for pitchers, anything, just so I could kind of learn what it was. I did that for a few years. And then I kind of switched into scouting for my last 2 years. It's kind of more in like a coordinator role where I would do a lot of like the office work with like the traveling and if scouts needed anything for like hotels and things like that. And then I'd go around and like get the video, I would scout and I would kind of learn like what the ins and outs of what scouting was. A lot different than what coaching is, because coaching, you're at the mercy of the players. You're there when the game is going on. You're there when practice is going on. Scouting, it's kind of you're in the back and you're on your own. And hey, we have 10 guys that cover the country and you need to be ready by July 1st or whenever the draft is that year. But no one's going to tell you what to do in that process. So figure it out, you know? So that was kind of what my years in scouting was like, all right, how to schedule myself, how to make sure I'm in the park at the right time at, you know, when I need to be there. Just developing relationships with other scouts, coaches, players. Like it's a lot different than just kind of showing up to the ballpark and being in the dugout with the same guys every day. So I kind of learned a lot about myself. Again, self-awareness, right? And understanding like, all right, I think I fit better with the lifestyle of coaching than with lifestyle of scouting than I did with coaching. And so I went to who is now the GM of the Rockies, was a scouting director at the time. And I asked him if I could somehow, some way get out into the fields, get out of the office and become a scout. And luckily, I'd known the director for the Atlanta Braves, so he's actually the one who hired me to move to Nashville. And then, you know, through COVID and all that, things have changed, but with Houston now. So it's kind of an up and down a little bit with a lot of pit stops here and there. But honestly, the road was paved a lot just by taking opportunities and saying yes to things and just trying to talk to people as much as you can. And dang, as, you know, personable as you can, because baseball is all about people. The whole sport up and down is all about people. And I think a lot of, because there's so many numbers, we forget about that.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a nice reality that scouting is still like people based.
That's awesome. So now you're with the Astros now. What I know we discussed it pre-recording this, but like what do you do for the Astros right now?
So I cover all high schools and colleges in the states of Tennessee, Kentucky, Missouri, Arkansas, Indiana, and Illinois. I'm like the Midwest scouting supervisor out here. And essentially, I just go around. I have some guys that kind of help us out in the area. And we just watch players every single day. These boys play every day, college, high school. It's Monday through Sunday. And so you try to figure out, you know, where you need to go. Again, 90% of the job is making sure you're at the right park at the right time when you need to be there. So you're calling coaches, you're calling guys, advisors are kind of letting you know when certain guys are playing. So it's a lot of communication. It's a lot of just being on the phone and picking it up and just figuring out like, all right, who do I need to see today? What time is he throwing and how do I get there in time?
How do you figure out like your list? Like you said, you're going to go to St. Louis here shortly. And I mean, how do you figure out your list of guys that you want to see? And as you're going to see those guys, are you taking notes on other guys as you're watching them play or how do you kind of work through that?
So, you know, on the college route, you kind of go based off of, you know, what they did the years before. If you go to school, if you go to college, you're not eligible for the draft again until you're 21 or your junior year. So you have 3 years to play and actually kind of go through the system and just see. So we're following you, you know, we're still watching you, we're scouting you there. So by the time they're eligible, you kind of figure out your college list through that. And you talk to coaches in the fall, they have scout days. So we come to scout day and they'll do like a whole workout for us. And you just pick out which guys kind of look good. And then you follow them in the spring and see if the stats kind of match like what the player was. With the high school scene, it's a little different. So there's what they call like a high school circuit in the summer. And like the best players in the country, high school wise, kind of participate in the circuit. So there's huge tournaments that are going on, like Jupiter. There's a massive tournament in Arizona, I think, that happens every year in June. We have events called like Area Codes, East Coast Pro, and like the top end high school kids get invited to these events. All the scouts are there, and like that's kind of how we figure out what the high school market's going to be, because we put them up against each other and like, all right, these are the guys that throw the hardest across the country, and these are supposed to be the best hitters, so let's figure out which guys are actually pretty good. And that gives you a little bit more insight, because sometimes, like, you know, the kid I saw yesterday, the guy he was facing was throwing, I think, 75 miles an hour. So, like, for me to evaluate that, it's a little hard because no one in the big leagues is going to be throwing that slow. Right. So I have to kind of be like, all right, what did I see in the summer when he was facing guys that were throwing a little bit harder, and trying to figure that out?
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay.
So, go ahead, Josh.
Yeah. So, I mean, so you're going to these major events, like, in the high school realm, but, like, speaking to players that aren't going to those events, so me growing up as a player, I always, you know, heard like, if you're good enough, they're going to find you, you know, scouts are going to find you. Like, is that actually like, is that true?
I do say that a lot. And it is true, because at the end of the day, now we're in the world of Twitter or X, I guess. And we have these third party, you know, publications like PBR and PG National, that because you're paying for these services, they're going to blast out your information. So, and they have scouts on their own that go to these high school games and kind of circle them out. So there's a lot of guys, even this year, that I didn't scout in the summer that I'm scouting in the spring, because somebody tweeted that they hit 96. And then, all right, I get that tweet. I call the coach. I figure it out if it's true. I get the makeup. You know, I try to figure out if the coach likes the kid. Is he a good guy? Does he have the what's in between the ears to make that jump from high school to pro ball? Or does he need to go to school? Does he just throw hard type thing, you know? And then from there, we go in and we just figure that out on our own. So a lot of it is predetermined, but we call them pop-up kids, and they happen every single year where a pop-up guy comes up and he's throwing 96, and you look at yourself and you're like, I have no idea who this is. And it's a good day sometimes. You're like, all right, we found a guy that, you know, made a big jump. This, you know, when we scout the high school kids in the summer, that's 6 or so months until the, you know, 7-8 months until they play again in the spring when we see them. So these kids get stronger, they make, you know, they grow, they make big jumps. And one guy might have been 90, 92, is now throwing 94, 96 in the spring. And it's like, okay, now I have to go watch him pitch.
Wow. So, like, so on social media, is Twitter or X, is that like the predominant kind of social media outlet that you kind of get forwarded your way?
Yeah, I would say so. A lot of it is based, it's just easier to like forward a tweet to somebody instead of being like, hey, have you seen this? You could just literally forward the video and be like, okay, this actually looks pretty good. Like, maybe I'll go. But, you know, advisors too, like, their job is to get their guys exposure. And so a lot of the time, if an advisor has a guy that might have been like a family friend, or they just somehow knew this kid, they'll kind of blast out text to all the scouts they know. I'm like, hey, I got a guy who's committed to, you know, Indiana and Evansville, who's not getting scouted right now. Like, do you mind going to see him? So there's a lot of like communication that way. You know, baseball's a huge world, but a small community. We all know each other, or somehow have played with each other, or someone knows somebody. And so you get little, you know, tickets here and there, just based off the people you know, and sometimes it helps.
Yeah. Do you feel like high school players, is there a lot of self-promotion within the, or is it mainly like advisors that are forwarding you information? Like, would you recommend players to do self-promotion on Twitter? Like, if they come on this podcast, they hear your name, and then suddenly, hey, I need to send Freddie my Twitter, you know, or my player profile or whatever it is. Is that something that happens?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think there's nothing wrong with putting yourself out there. It's kind of how I got here, you know, and the exposure it's huge. So I would say, Blo, like, if you're going to do that, you know, come up with your best clips. Like, I might only have 2 minutes of time, and you may only get one day where I'm in the park. So it's like, you kind of have to show the best of what you have. When you get the opportunity, you get them. So if you do it, like, yeah, come up with your best clips and send them out. We actually have in Houston, we have a legend. His name is Jim Stevenson, and he's actually in Tulsa, and he does it every single year. He's got a Twitter where he blasts out like, hey, if you have, you know, the gall to do it, send me your video and I'll scout you out. And he gets like thousands of videos every spring. These boys just blast him. And he's found big leaguers through the Twitter feed of just guys saying like, hey, I'm at Blaine College, or I'm, you know, I'm McLennan or somewhere smaller that, you know, he maybe not have it on his radar at the time, but you put yourself out there, you put a good video and you just never know. I'm a big believer in like, you never know who you're going to meet. Like I say yes to most things. And so I definitely think like, if you shake the right hand, like it can take you far. And so I never like guys who are kind of afraid to, you know, shoot their shot or even talk to me at the games, even with parents or something like that. Like I feel like the more information you can get and the more information I can get, we're both winning on that end. Like if I can educate you on the process and then I can in turn get information on what you guys are going through, we're both winning on that end. So it helps everybody, and hopefully it allows, you know, that player may one day become, even if he goes to school, he may become pretty good and we're scouting him 3 years later at, you know, whatever school he's at. And so you start remembering and you build the Rolodex and like, oh, I remember him sending me a Twitter feed and now he's killing it at the University of Oklahoma right now or something. So
That's awesome. Yeah, that's great to hear that, you know, that players are doing that, because like it's nice to hear that it's still happening. Cause I mean, I feel like when I was playing, it was all like I would cold email a lot of coaches. You know, I'd just be like, hey, here's my video, here's this, here's that. Obviously in the scouting realm, like I played indie ball, but like never got scouted out of college or anything like that. But like now hearing that, hey, you welcome parents and players to come talk to you. Like I wish I knew that when I was younger. Like I faced Steven Strasburg in high school and it was like, there's always 10 scouts of the game. It was like, I don't want to, you know, like I don't want to go talk to those scouts. Like, I mean, I do, but I don't, you know, like
it's an opportunity and, you know, you could take it two ways. Your teammates could be jealous that you're getting scouted, or your teammates could take the opportunity to meet these scouts because that's what they're interested in doing. And so, you hopefully have a guy who we're scouting that is a good teammate and he's allowing them to, you know, be themselves as well. But at the end of the day, we're there to watch every guy on the field. You know, if I'm there watching the shortstop because that's the name I got, but the catcher is going off and he's hitting a bunch of home runs, he may not be ready for me, but I know a ton of college coaches. And if he's uncommitted somewhere and I like him enough, like I'm going to start floating his name somewhere. And I'm going to be like, all right, here's a video of a kid that I just saw. He's uncommitted. Nobody's on him. Like you could use this guy. So that happens all the time where out of nowhere, just because we're in the park, you know, it gives somebody an opportunity there to hopefully make something happen.
That's awesome. I mean, that's one thing I tell. I mean, I coach 13U now, but like you never know who's watching. Like that's an awesome piece of advice right there. Like always hustling. Like my biggest pet peeve is run on and off the field, because again, you don't know who's watching. If your one play is your hustle, like you may catch someone's attention. You may, you know, like it's crazy.
I've heard stories of that. Like the guy who, the hard 90s guy, is the one who gets the scholarship because that's the one the coach wants to teach, you know, and he might not be the best player on the team, but he runs the hardest and he gives the most. So it's easier to teach baseball than it probably is character, I would think, in terms of like, or even just will, like to actually have the desire and like the work ethic to put in the work to play baseball every day and to try to make this a job. Like it takes a lot. So I think it's a little easier to be like, okay, we can hit grounders all day long, but I can't teach the guy who to want to hit grounders all day long, you know?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So what are some of those things that you look for in players that you're scouting?
You kind of start at the base, right? You're looking at a frame. Does he stand out? Because most guys on TV do. And so you're trying to figure out who the best guy on the team is just by seeing if he stands out. If I'm walking into, you know, Tulsa High School and I've never been there and I have zero idea who's on the field, so that's the first thing I do. And then I look up the middle. Most of the time the coaches are putting your best athletes up the middle. He's the catcher, he's the pitcher, he's the shortstop or the center fielder. So you start there and then you kind of work your way on the corners. So you look at the guys who are the most athletic, who look the, you know, maybe the best or most projectable. And then you kind of just figure out if that's the guy that can also play. It's usually the shortstop in high school. Even if he doesn't play shortstop in pro ball, he's usually playing shortstop at, you know, on his high school team. So we kind of just start there. And then a lot of it is, and I kind of alluded to earlier, it's balance, rhythm, and timing. That's all baseball really is. It's repeating your mechanics. Like, are you athletic enough to repeat the motions that your body allows you to do? Then you can play baseball. If you put yourself in the position, like, you can do it. And so we look for guys that have the balance of keeping, you know, if it's a hitter, keeping the balance through a backswing. If it's a pitcher, keeping his balance through the delivery on the follow through. Rhythm, same thing, you know, is he stiff in the box or is he loose? You see some of those guys like Alex Rodriguez was just so loose and he just kind of bop a little bit, and Jeter had his little thing, and so, or Sheffield had his thing, some sort of rhythm mechanism. Pitchers are the same way, you know, with their leg kicks. Do they have rhythm through the actual lower half of their body to generate momentum down the hill? And then just the timing of it all. If you're able to put the bat on the ball on time, same with timing with pitchers, it's a little bit more if your plant foot is on time with your actual like release point, like of where your elbow is as you're getting down the hill. You kind of want it to be like at a perfect 90 degree angle, but not everyone's like that. But as close as possible to getting to that like center position to where you are finishing a little bit more balanced. And then from there, it's like, okay, does he have the stuff? Is he throwing hard enough? Can he spin a breaking ball? Is he throwing strikes? So I think with the high school pitching market, it's a little different because everyone's throwing hard, as we kind of said earlier. So now you have to separate the hard throwers, and it's like, who can actually pitch? Because there's a lot of really good college players, but in what we do in the business I'm in, like, I'm trying to find the guy who's going to play on TV, and the guy who usually does play on TV is the guy who knows how to pitch. So we can get you stronger. We can teach you a breaking ball. We can teach you, you know, good form and how to get bigger in the gym, but learning how to pitch and pitchability and command, like, it's almost like it's almost an innate thing. It's just, you kind of have the ability naturally or you don't. So those are the dudes that separate themselves.
Are you looking at any of intangibles? Are you trying to see any intangibles as you're watching those players?
Yeah. So when it comes down to the draft itself now, so once the player establishes himself as a player and like that, I'm like, okay, this is a guy that we're going to take into consideration for a pick. And then we start doing all the makeup work, and we go into the home. We start figuring out, okay, is the kid mentally ready for baseball? Are the parents mentally ready for baseball? Is this, you know, family home situation? Is it something I need to worry about? You start calling everybody, you know, the coaches, anybody that's had a hand on this kid, and figuring out what the step was. Like, how did he get to this point? How did he get so good? Do you feel like he's mature enough? Can he handle the pressure of pro ball, being away from his family? You know, can he handle being in a clubhouse with Latinos that don't speak English? Is he able to be in a clubhouse with 21, 22 year old college kids? Like, it's a huge jump. And so the makeup aspect on the high school market is extremely vital. And we take it pretty seriously, because no matter how good you are, if it doesn't line up with the values of what we have on the pro side, we'll just let you go to school. And we'll say, like, you can figure it out. We'll scout you for the next 3 years. But if there's any questions, like genuinely, you know, big red flags on the kid, like, we'll kind of let that sift itself out. There's always somebody good on the other side of the world, maybe, or on the other side of the country, that, you know, there's too many players out there for us to scout to kind of deal with guys that don't necessarily want it or have bad makeup, or, you know, we can't want it for themselves more than they want it for themselves. So I think that's kind of where we try to sift through, is like, who's going to have the desire to put in the work.
That's awesome. Yeah. So my sister, she's an attorney, and she actually is working to become like more on the agency side of things. And she went through the MLB scouting agency, the program and all that. And like, we were talking through like the actual scouting, like the numbers and metrics and how you grade. Are you grading high schoolers a little bit different than like the pro or the college guys? Like, I know like 80 is the best, you know, like 80, what's it called? 80 grade or whatever, like grade, like what's kind of the grading metrics you're looking for? I know you kind of went through it, but are you actually grading the high schoolers different than college, or are you grading them like side by side? If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It's a 20-80 scale. 50 is average. In the world of what we do, 50 is if you're an average Major League Baseball player, you're really good. Like, to be a 50 is like you're one of the best players in the world type thing, you know? So average, it gets this negative connotation of like, oh, I'm just like in the middle. But like, to be an average baseball player, Major League Baseball player, you're one of the best in the world. So I think with the scale, to even get to 50 for me, it's kind of an honor, and it means a lot, especially with the high school guys. So the best to my ability, I'm grading them side by side. If you want to be scouted the same time as a 21-year-old, as an 18-year-old, then you better perform as the 21-year-old, as an 18-year-old, you know? It's a lot of money involved. And so if it's going to take $1 million to buy you out of your commitment to the University of Oklahoma, I expect to walk into the park and see a $1 million arm. Otherwise, you're going to go to the University of Oklahoma. So it's kind of like you have to set the expectation of yourself, but also understand that we are in the business of finding players that are ready for us now. Because granted, like, the market will set itself, right? If I'm like a 85 to 90 mile an hour dude and I'm super projectable, but I'm asking for 7 figures to go into the draft, I'm just not ready right now. So I'll probably go to school. Maybe I do get $1 million in a few years after that, but the projection of it all, it will allow me to kind of grow into that and then kind of earn the $1 million. Vice versa, if I'm like a 6'3 dude and I'm doing 95, 98 and I'm asking for $1 million, like, then I probably get it and I probably go to school because my stuff is aligning with like what the guys in college are doing right now. So we still want projectability and we still kind of like are still looking for the future with the high school kids, but the market will kind of set itself. You talk to your family. If you're that good and you have like an advisor, you're talking to your family, you're figuring out what it's going to take to buy you out of that commitment that you made to the university that you're going to. And then if that number just doesn't match, then you go to school. Whether you feel like you're good enough or not, you kind of have to set that standard. So a lot of guys bet on themselves and go to school. Or if you just feel like I'm ready and I don't want to go to school and I'll take, you know, what the draft gives me, then you kind of go and you sign. So
got it. So in regards to like players, just kind of the back end of like their background, do you see better players being developed when they're multi-sport athletes, like being raised, or would you recommend guys like, cause we're more on the youth side, would you recommend guys just completely sell out to baseball and play that from 10U all the way up? Or would you rather them see like, you know, players, I guess I'm asking like, do you see more well-rounded players if they're multi-sport athletes or if they, you know, stick to baseball?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of multi-sport athletes. I think it teaches you a lot. Baseball is a different type of athleticism. There are a lot of basketball players who can windmill dunk, but you put a bat in their hands and they have no idea what they're doing. And so I like to see that guys have different types of athleticism. And, you know, if he's a big center and he's also a pitcher, I want to see that, like, athleticism, and if he has any grit, does he have any toughness to him? Because there's different sports that allow you to exert different, you know, personalities and emotions through that sport. The quarterback, like, I want to see him get, you know, get riled up, or I want to see the linebacker kind of hit the dude. And so I love when guys are multi-sport athletes. Those are usually the ones that are sneaky, because they may not be at the level of the dude who's been playing baseball every day in Texas since he was 12 yet, but a lot of the times that dude will pass him eventually, because once he starts focusing on baseball and puts the football down or puts the basketball down, it just makes his body makes a huge jump. The stuff makes a big jump. Especially when it comes to the pitchers, I'll say that, like, I want to see a pitcher play another sport as well, because that just shows me the athleticism. And the old adage of like pitchers aren't athletes, like, I just don't believe in, because to me, like, that's probably the hardest thing to do is repeat your mechanics and be able to throw strikes. And like, that's my indicator of your athleticism. Bartolo Colon may have looked the way he did, but he was a hell of an athlete because of the way he was able to repeat himself and throw strikes. So I think that for me, yeah, and drop a bomb.
Man, I tell you what, Colon pitched for the Rangers for a couple of years a while back, and man, I loved it when he was on the mound. He was so fun to watch.
Yeah,
and they make fun of him, but guess what? He threw strikes, and
yeah, he did.
Those are the guys that pitched. I think he pitched 15 something years.
Yeah, so, him. Yeah.
So I think it's yeah, it's important for us. It's not everything, you know, and if you're going to be an old baseball guy, then I hope you're pretty good. Like, I hope that's what you're betting on. But it definitely helps.
Yeah. So the MLB shortened the draft in recent years, yeah. Right? And that has started to kind of have a trickle down effect at the college level and at the high school level. What have you seen? How has the new shorter version of the draft affected scouting and the games at the high school and college level?
Yeah, I mean, they're getting better at that level now. So essentially, it's a trickle down effect. If there's only 20 rounds and the other half, it used to be 40 when I was starting. So the other half of that draft is now in college still. And so if you're looking at the D1 level, now you have older guys that are sitting on rosters. So the freshman isn't getting a chance. And now he's going to a mid-major, and he may be an SEC type guy, but now he's at the mid-major. And then those guys get trickled down into JUCO. And so every level is actually kind of getting better. But a lot of the levels are getting older because of that. And so,
yeah, I think, and COVID helped. COVID affected that too, for sure.
In college baseball, the goal is to win. These coaches get paid to win. The universities bring in money when they win. It's to win. It's not necessarily to develop. And that's the biggest difference between if I go into a home and I'm like, do you want to go play pro ball or do you want to go to the university? That is the biggest difference. It's a winning now thing, or is it like, am I going to take the years to go develop? Because it's not going to be, it might not be the fun route, and it might not be, you know, the most sexiest route in terms of like what your career would look like, but our goals are a lot different.
You mean like working your way up through the minor league, starting in low A or whatever.
Yeah. And you're in these, you know, sometimes these bad ballparks and bad hotels, and you're eating the same meal and you're traveling on a bus. And so like, it's not as glamorous.
And NIL, I imagine, makes a big difference.
100%. But if your goal is to play big league baseball, then like, it just depends on what you're actually trying to do. And if you're good enough to go to a school like that and you get the innings and you do develop, then go to a school like that and do that, you know, and earn your money 3 years later. But if you feel like you're just going to sit on the bench, or you're not going to develop and get the innings, then maybe pro ball is the best route for you. So we're starting to see, I think what MLB wants is the college baseball world to be the minor leagues. They still want to keep cutting teams. Like, I think it sounds like what they want is to just have double A, triple A, which it would be absurd because it's a huge jump between A and double A. But what they are trying to make it is that the college teams are kind of paying for the development, because, you know, 3 years later, they'll just get into pro ball and we won't have to spend the money on all of those minor league teams that were developing them at that age before. So now you're seeing college baseball become this form of like minor league baseball, where it's like, all right, you go to college, it's a farm system at the lower level. This is what A ball would be basically. And then once you're ready in the pro ball, we'll see if you're good enough to get into double A. And if that's the case, there's going to be a lot of kids cut. Like, the cream will rise to the top pretty easily, because double A is a massive jump. So we still have to have like a sifter, I think, where like you have at least one A ball team. But that's kind of the goal, is to make college baseball a form of a minor league system.
Wow. And that's interesting. And I wonder, like, as you know, as we progress into that, then with those coaches, I mean, you have to win. Like, how much development is even going to happen then?
And it keeps trickling down, where the guy, again, if you're at Tennessee and you're not getting your innings, then it's like, okay, well, let's go to Middle Tennessee then. And then you're seeing guys drafted out of mid-majors now, and they give them a little bit more time and love. And I kind of what you alluded to earlier, Josh, like, if you're good, we're going to find you. You just need to be on the field for us to find you. So I always tell the kids that. I'm like, we don't care what school you go to. Go where you're going to play. And now people want the bumper sticker, and they want the bio, and they want the sweatshirt. And they want to say, I'm playing in the SEC. If you're good enough, go play in the SEC. I will never tell you not to. But at the end of the day, you better be on that field, because we're not going to see you play unless you're on it. And I think that's the difference. It's like understanding what level you're at are you ready to play? And if you're, especially if you're a high school hitter, like you need at bats. So like go somewhere where you're gonna hit, you know, go somewhere where you're gonna get attention enough to be on the field and develop, because you're not gonna be good right away. It's gonna take you a few years. But if your first year playing is your junior year, your draft eligible year, with it's kind of hard for us to do anything about that.
Oh, gotcha. So speaking of winning, what did it feel like being in an organization that won the World Series?
Unbelievable. Honestly, it was an unbelievable experience because it happened very rapidly for me. I was my first year in Houston, so I kind of almost felt like I didn't necessarily like deserve to be a part of it. But you kind of lead all of those like moments have left, like the past 8 years of my career have kind of led to that moment of me finally being with an organization that, you know, valued winning as much as they do. They value the guys that they have in the room. And so it kind of felt like, all right, everything was kind of coming into fruition for me. And at the end of it all, here's a World Series ring. So I think, you know, just being a part of an org that actually genuinely cares about winning, it's massive. It changes your whole mindset going into the year, especially when we're on the road a lot, because you want to feel like you're being, like what you're doing is being valued and actually being understood, and that you're contributing to the team up top. So when your owner, when your GM, when your scouting director, everybody's in lines and the goal is to win another championship, like it feels good. So we're getting a little older, but I feel like we're still competing and we're still trying to do everything we can to make sure we stay at the top. It's been good.
As a Texas Rangers fan, do you just keep a trash can nearby to bang on whenever you need to?
I knew that question was coming at some point.
Yeah, I try to stay away from that.
I'll say this, and I say the same thing to everybody else. I was in Colorado when that happened, so I have no idea what. I have no idea what you're talking about.
That's
like I said, it's a team that values winning. So
yeah, what, so like Jose Altuve playing left field, like that was literally, that came out of left field.
yeah. I mean, Altuve, I think, you know, obviously is a Hall of Fame type of player, and he's the face of our franchise and all that. But as you get older, you lose a step, and he's not a big guy in the first place. Right. So to lose a step in the infield, it's hard. And we felt like he probably would gain a little bit more if you allow his feet to open up in the outfield. And he's athletic. He's got instinct. So it was kind of like, all right, let's just see what we have there. And, you know, so far there's been ups and downs, but I think as long as he stays hitting, that's kind of at the end of the day, we always say that. Right. It's like, you know, we scout these players. I'm like, well, where's he going to play? And it's like, well, if he's going to hit, like, he'll find his way into the lineup.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that's truth right there. That's kind of what it comes down to is the hit tool. But yeah, so it's been an interesting year for us. It's been fun, but I think it's a lot of experimenting. We're kind of on that phase of like, okay, the 10-year dynasty is kind of, you know, happened. So how do we continue to open that window so that we're not going through a phase where we're not good for 10 years. We want to keep that window, you know, open as much as we can. So we're in that limbo of figuring out how to get guys from the draft, which is where we step in. Like, hey, we got to fill in these holes because we keep losing players. Kyle Tucker, a massive hole to lose. Alex Bregman, a massive hole to lose. You know, Correa before that, Springer before that. So how do we continue replenishing these players that keep signing for a lot of money? Although our owner loves to win, we're not the team to just hand out, you know, these $500,000 contract or $500 million contracts. So we still have to compete, but we got to find cheaper ways to do it. And that's kind of where we come in. So it's been an amazing organization to work for because everyone has the same mindset. It's like, we know what we're doing and there's a high expectation. And we're all kind of rowing in the same direction to make sure that we keep winning. So I think that's the fun part about baseball. It's hard when you're losing.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure you guys like being at these kids' tournaments all the time too. It's like, oh, you can see it. Yeah, you can see it. The mood changes after game one if you lose that. And you have three more to play after that day. And you're like, it's going to be a long day today.
Yep. Man, yeah, we had long. We had that on Saturday. We lost. We were winning our first game 2-0 and then lost it in the last inning, and it affected the next game. And we lost that one too. And so I was like, oh, well, crud. So we ended up like lowest seed, and didn't get into the bracket we wanted, of course, but then the boys bounced back. They were resilient and went 3-0 on Sunday, and it was fun.
Yeah. The comebacks are good too. You have to have a story somehow. So yeah, I honestly, it's funny. You guys are talking about these youth tournaments and my mind just went back into like how I remember all of that, you know. And I think when you're in the gist of things, you don't appreciate it as much, but those days are the days I fell in love with baseball and the days that I, you know, probably led me to this point is playing travel ball and being with my friends and having my family, you know, they're meeting friends too, and it was just like this whole community that you build together. It's awesome.
Do you have a favorite youth baseball memory?
I do, actually. I was in like this big tournament in Moses Lake, Washington, and I was probably like 12 or 13 years old, but we were in a championship game and I was playing center field, and you know, a ball gets hit over my head and I'm chasing it down. I made a diving play and we won the game because of that play. And I just remember in that moment being like, this is what I wanted to feel, like the exhilaration of one winning, but being a part of something bigger than yourselves. Like I was doing this for everyone on this field and I'm doing this for myself, and realizing that like, this is the feeling that you're chasing. And that was the first time I had that. And then as I keep going in through my career, there's been, you know, moments in my life that you keep feeling that, you know, the World Series is one of them. The first playoff game that the Rockies won in God knows how many years, that was one of them. Like, so like there's little moments where I'm like, okay, I keep chasing that feeling. And so that was the first time I ever felt that. I was probably like 12, but it was just a nice diving play that I'm like, I don't know how I caught it, but I'm glad I did.
Oh man.
That's cool. That's cool. I love that. So speaking. Yeah.
I'll go ahead. Yeah. Go, Adam.
Speaking of, sorry, we're not in the same room today, so we can't read each other's nonverbal cues right now. Speaking of Little League youth baseball, if you could give one piece of advice to a Little League youth player who dreams of playing in the big leagues someday, what would it be?
I would say to have fun and fall in love with it first, because if you don't love it, you probably won't put in the work that it takes to get there. So enjoy the process and to have fun as much as you can, because it will, the moment you start getting really good and the moment you start kind of putting in a lot of the work and the effort to do to get to that point and to, you know, hopefully get a scholarship somewhere or to get scouted, the mindset changes a little bit, because it does become a little bit more of a work, as you know, mindset than it is just to have fun. But the foundation and the base of all of that is that you fell in love with a kid's sports game that was fun, and you have to always remember that, because there's going to be times where you're slumping, you're not hitting, or you're not throwing strikes, or you're getting hit, whatever it is, and you have to have the ability to, you know, shake it off, wake up the next day, forget about it, and keep moving on. But a lot of that is because you're in love with the process and you love what you're doing. So as cliche as it is, it's just you have to fall in love with it first. So have fun.
Now, jumping on the exact opposite side of things, so giving advice to someone that would like to become a scout, like on more on the player development side of things, is there any piece of advice you'd give to them? It sounds like you were really big on, you know, just networking, but what was your big advice for that if someone did want to be in the scouting realm?
Network and make sure, like, I'll say this, like, timing is everything. So when you do get an opportunity, make sure you're ready and prepared for it. Like, if you're going to network and you're going to go out there and put yourself out there, make sure that you actually are prepared to like answer questions and to like, get an interview and to actually like go through the process, because it might be on the spot. They might be like, okay, like, tell me about yourself. I want to know what you've done. Like, what have you done to prepare yourself to be a Major League Baseball scout, you know? And you kind of have to have your resume ready before you're there putting yourself out there. So I would say just be prepared, but also like be prepared to say no or to hear a lot of no's. I can't even tell you how many interviews I've done that I didn't even get a call back for, or they just told me no. And I've flown into interviews plenty of times where, they're like, all right, thank you for your time, but you know, we're going to move on to somebody else. So you have to learn how to take everything with like a grain of salt. A failure is like huge in baseball. Like if you can be comfortable with failure, like you're going to be okay. And scouting is the same way. So we are, I'm not going to get every player right when I'm scouting. And I know and understand that. So not being afraid to fail, it's pretty big. So just put yourself out there. Don't be afraid to fail and be prepared.
Cool. What's the coolest piece of memorabilia you have?
My World Series ring.
I think I knew the answer to that. But yeah. Do you have it displayed somewhere? Do you have it displayed somewhere?
Oh yeah, it's on the mantle.
Or do you wear it everywhere?
It's funny too. So I know Adam's sister, and we met at the wedding, and I only wear that at weddings. And I asked him before I wore it, because I know they're both from Texas, and so I was wondering, I was like, okay, do you want me to wear it or not? And they were both like, please, absolutely. So it's the only time I do wear it is usually like at a wedding or some sort of like banquet maybe in Houston. I wear it for the draft. We'll kind of bring them for that. But yeah, it sits there pretty. It's definitely something that I think growing into it, that was something like a huge goal of mine was like, all right, like how do I make sure I set myself up to be with a team that values that. And so when it happened, it was just kind of like one of those surreal moments. But yeah, you start being around these athletes, and I have a ton of balls, but I don't really get like starstruck by these athletes, because you're with them a lot, right? And so like they kind of just seem like people to me. But every now and then, like if there's a kid that I think is going to be really good, I'll get like his autograph and he's like 18 or something, and just kind of have that and stash it just to see, like, hopefully he makes it one day. But for the most part, I just like being around these boys. A lot of my memorabilia is just talking to them and kind of just interacting with them, being a part of their lives.
That's cool. Do you remember who the first player you scouted that got drafted is? And
oh man.
Or a player that you scouted that you were really high on that ultimately was able to make it to the highest level, and you're like, hey, I found that guy.
I don't know about necessarily like finding him, and it's funny too, because like the guys in Colorado, a lot of them I scouted, but was a part of like their rookie ball like process. So like, and some of them aren't with Colorado anymore, but those are the guys that I kind of have like an affinity of like, oh, like I remember being there when he was in rookie ball and we finally got him to like where he was. But for the most part, like, I mean, I've been a part of a lot of guys who have been in the big leagues. A lot of those University of Tennessee guys are there right now. I have three or four, I think I have three guys with the Braves right now, one with the Yankees, and five with Houston right now. So a lot of them are still in the minor leagues, kind of working their way through it. You kind of have to let the time go through fruition, but the ones that are in the big leagues now are when I was with Colorado, and you know, like Garrett Hampson and some of those dudes who didn't necessarily think you were going to be these big long-term elite baseball players, but Garrett Hampson's had a great career, and I think he's going on like year 7 or 8, and I just never thought that would happen, you know? So it's awesome to see things like that. And
that's
a great human, great player. And so yeah, there's certain dudes that I think the big ones, I'm like, all right, like we expected them to be good, so I don't really feel part of that process. It's the guys that get drafted late and they end up making it, and you're like, okay, like that's a cool one, you know? Like I remember seeing him when he was, you know, 16 years old or something, and now he's pitching on TV.
That's so awesome.
The process, it's long, because it takes 4 or 5 years sometimes to get there. So you're, yeah, as a scout, you're kind of waiting. You're like, I thought he was, you know, I hope he's good, but you kind of have to let time run its course.
Oh, that's so funny. What's the best? Yeah. What's your favorite town in your coverage right now? They like
my favorite town.
Yeah, that you scout right now, or that you just enjoy being in.
Yeah, so even though originally a Southern California kid, I'm falling in love with Tennessee like so much. This place is getting my heart. It honestly is. So I love Johnson City. I'm a big outdoors guy. Out here you can go up to the trails and you can hike and bike. And so I'm a big guy here. I love Chattanooga. Just anywhere near the water or outdoors in the mountains, I think that's kind of where I gravitate towards. I like Nashville. It's fun. It's a lot of, there's a lot to do and it's entertaining. Not necessarily the biggest outdoor city, but this job allows me to get my itches kind of here and there. So Nashville's a good place for me right now and to kind of settle in the middle of like my big territory. But yeah, Tennessee is slowly growing on me.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Cool.
Well, very nice. Well, Adam, do you have any other questions?
This was great. This was an awesome conversation. I really just enjoyed hearing some of your story and some of the things that you look for. I know too, even just getting to talk baseball and that kind of thing is, I could tell that it's a passion for you, and it was a fun conversation. We might have to do it again sometime.
Yeah, I absolutely appreciate this. I call it talking shop, and I can talk shop all day long. And for me, this is like the reason I can't speak for every scout, but the reason why I kind of do this is we try to like somehow impact more than what I can do for myself, right? I didn't get to play professionally, but how do I still be, you know, an impactful person in some of these lives that could change some of these lives? Like we're dealing with life-changing money and we're dealing with life-changing process, and so just to be a part of that and to have a little bit of a snippet of it, like that's kind of why I wake up every day. It's like, how do I find the kid that we can change lives? So I think doing stuff like this, it's awesome for me too. And I like coaching, you know, I like helping these kids. The kids are what I'm going to be scouting here in the next few years, so it's like making sure that they're all tied up, so by the time they get ready to, for me, you know, they're prepared and they're ready to go.
Awesome. That's awesome. Well, Freddie, thanks so much for talking shop. It's been a blast. I know this conversation could probably go on for a couple more hours, but
yeah, no kidding.
It's just so cool to hear your side of things. Cause I mean, we're talking about, you know, guys that are potentially going to be on TV someday. You know, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So. I appreciate y'all having me, and, you know, best of luck to everybody involved. And honestly, thank you. This has been an honor and I'd love to come back.
Sounds good.
Hey, thanks, Freddie.
All right, guys. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.